Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here Monday, January 31st, 2022, 16 minutes past the hour, last day of January 2022. Now, I got to do a little bit of housekeeping before we get to our guest. First of all, congratulations to the Cincinnati Bengals. I know everybody here in Ohio is absolutely thrilled that we have an Ohio team in the Super Bowl for the first time, and honestly, I don't know how long. I'm sure all the newspapers will fill you in on that today, but I don't even know if it's been in my lifetime, to be honest with you. It has been a long, long time, so congratulations to the Bengals for coming out of nowhere from Cincinnati and getting an Ohio team in the Super Bowl. What fun that's going to be, and those Super Bowl parties are going to be something else. Also, do want to remind everybody, as I told everybody last week, I will not be here tomorrow. Adam will be filling in for me tomorrow, and on Thursday, Glenn will be filling in for me, but I will be here on Wednesday and on Friday. And I do want to just mention, I got a card in the mail over the weekend here at the station from two of our longtime listeners, Phyllis and Larry, and the letter in there was so kind, so nice, and just personal, and I can't thank Phyllis and Larry enough for that and what they've done over the years for the station here. So thank you so much. And I think that's all the housekeeping. And now we're going to turn to one of my favorite people, one of my all-time favorite guests on this program. He has been with us for, probably over 15 years now, the entire run of this show, every time we needed to know something medically. Certainly through this pandemic, we have had him on many times. You probably remember him best as a best-selling author and the medical correspondent on the Today Show. And today, we're going to talk about the pandemic, where it went over the holiday season, where it is now, and also cancer, because on December 23rd, I believe it was, we passed the 50th anniversary mark of Nixon's war on cancer. So changes since 1971. All this with our buddy, Dr. Art Uhlein. Dr. Uhlein, how are you?
Good morning, Scott. I'm feeling really fine after that introduction. It's 6:15 here in Los Angeles, and the folks at home may not know, but I'm not used to dragging myself out of bed at this hour. You're the only guy I do that for.
And I appreciate it, Doctor. Thank you so much. Doctor, I want to get into this pandemic, because we all thought that the Omicron variant and the holidays were going to make for a bad situation. I don't think that anybody thought it was going to make for the worst situation that we have had during the entire pandemic, to which hospitals were filled, National Guards were called in here in Ohio and other places. What happened over the holidays?
Well, I think what happened over the holidays is that we learned the single most important fact that people need to know about this awful disease. And quite simply, it is this. We don't know what we don't know. This is the first time we've ever been hit with something like this. And the initial management of this disease was based on very little information, a huge amount of guesswork, and frankly, a very cavalier attitude toward disease. I mean, hey, we're the guys who learned how to conquer every disease, right? Well, not this one. This one is here to stay. It's constantly changing on us. That is the nature of some viral diseases, not all. And it's full of surprises, some of which we have not seen yet. And the problem is we've learned an incredible amount about this disease in the short time it's been with us, less than 2 years. I mean, we've got an immunization that is working to the extent it's keeping people from dying, huge numbers of people. We've got several treatments that appear to be quite effective, not 100% effective, but quite effective, but only if taken extremely early in the course of the disease, and the earlier they are taken, the more effective they are. I mean, we've learned so much about this, but there's still so much to be learned, so much that we don't know, and we don't know what we don't know. So, could there be another variant that shows up in the next few months? We don't know. It's likely. If it shows up, will it be more contagious? We don't know. Will it be more lethal? We don't know. And this makes it extremely difficult from a public health point of view to deal with it. And the problem that we have right now is that this disease is being dealt with by two distinctly different populations in two distinctly different ways. One part of our population sees this as a public health problem and is asking, what can I do to help? And the other part is seeing this as a political problem and saying, not me. But we're all in this together, and we're going to be in it for a long time. We don't know how long. And it is time, I think, for some calm, quiet, sobering, honest talk about this. Otherwise, we're up at, what, 800,000 people now, almost approaching 900,000 dead. Dead, not sick, but dead in the United States. And there is just no excuse for allowing this death toll to keep climbing as rapidly it is. By the way, death may not be the worst thing that COVID brings to us. Some people with the so-called long form of COVID have had their lives destroyed. They're alive, but they can't think. They're in a fog. They don't feel well. How long will this go on? We don't know.
You know, Dr. Yulin, something that was striking to me in the 2 year period of this pandemic that I saw right after the holidays with this Omicron variant is we kept hearing for a long time about people who were asymptomatic, had no symptoms of this illness. But we ran out of testing supplies this time in a lot of cases. Hospitals were overrun. National Guards were called in. And I was thinking to myself, well, people must be showing symptoms to want to go get tested, to go to the emergency room, to go to the urgent cares. Are the symptoms becoming more prevalent? Are we seeing less asymptomatic people?
We don't know. It's just another example of something we don't know. You are asking a really good question. That's the kind of question that the scientists would be asking as they sit around the meeting table saying, what's going on here? We don't have the answer to that question. It does appear, I just shake my head in dismay when I hear people say the vaccine isn't working. My God, it is working fantastically well to keep people off ventilators and to keep them from dying. But it does, the illness in immunized people, by and large, appears to be much less in degree. But what does this mean for the future? We don't know.
You know, Dr. Yulin, and this is just an opinion question, something that has arisen in this pandemic in regard to doctors, people in the medical field, medical experts that we see on television, because for a lot of people, that's where they get their information on this. And it's interesting because the vaccination came out and then the booster and then we saw this Omicron variant. And a lot of these medical experts won't say what you just said. They will say, they almost all will say in unison that it stops you from getting less sick, but they're not as forceful with it when it comes to you need to get this so you do not die. They almost shy away from it, in a way, on all channels. Why is that?
I'm not sure why. I kept my position on the Today Show for 23 years until I retired because I was not afraid to say, I don't know, and I was not afraid to tell people what I believed, what I did in my best interest, and what I believed might be in everyone else's best interest. There is so much confusing information out there. Let's face it, this is new. The part that troubles me so much, Scott, is the fantastic amount of misinformation that has been spread by people who suddenly assume an authoritarian role. And by the way, one of the problems, we didn't have the internet back when I was on television. One of the problems is that the internet gives everyone, informed or not, an equal opportunity, and if they write cleverly, the appearance of identical authority and knowledge. So I spend about 20 or 30 minutes a day with a 78-year-old friend of mine. I'm 85, so he's one of my kid friends. And trying to convince him that he's being misinformed. He refuses to get the immunization. He's placed his life in jeopardy because older age is probably, if not the greatest risk factor for hospitalization and death, the second or third greatest risk factor. And I just don't want him to die. And he says, yeah, but it won't keep me from getting COVID. How do you answer something like that? When he then talks about myocarditis, which affects primarily young people, when he talks about conspiracies, when he... I've never seen anything like this in my lifetime. I hope no one else has to ever see anything like this. But we are dealing with two problems. We are dealing with the lack of knowledge and information about a disease that we've never seen before, and with the ability of anyone to become a make-believe expert showing up on your home screen.
Dr. Euline, one of the interesting things here that has puzzled me from the beginning, if you are on the internet, if you watch television, if you listen to radio, read magazines, newspapers, whatever it is, however you get your information, I can understand how you might be misled or be taken to an opinion of your own. What I don't understand is when it comes to a medical condition that has killed people, which certainly COVID-19 has, almost everybody I know has a primary care physician. Now, why wouldn't you just call your doctor, who obviously I would think you trust, or why are they your doctor? Like if you had the cold. Before COVID, if you had a cold, you'd call, you'd get an antibiotic. If you had the flu, they'd say, keep hydrated. If it gets worse, go to the hospital. And you would listen to that. You didn't get on the internet and check that out. Now, with this pandemic, why won't people call their doctor? Why won't they say, should I get the vaccine? Why won't they do that? What in the world, what's different?
I think what's different is the internet. And the internet, pardon me, early on, was spreading lies. For example, that the AMA was behind the conspiracy. That the AMA, American Medical Association, was exaggerating the risks of this so doctors would get more business. And it's crazy. But as you know, the algorithms on the internet are designed to find out which way you're leaning based on what you click on, and then to keep sending you more of what you lean toward. So it almost, getting on that internet almost becomes a self-reinforcing process. If you're leaning toward a lie, they'll fill your screen with more lies because that's what you like.
Well, herein lies the problem. If it's news, yes, that's bad. And we've talked about news that is not exactly correct, and we're going to have to fix that problem one day, or at least deal with it stronger than we are now. But when it comes to medicine, if I am not a doctor, and I have never studied medicine, why would I get on Google and Google things, and I might read 75 things? Why would I think that that makes me an expert or would lead me to a intellectual opinion on this subject? Why wouldn't I talk to a doctor?
Well, I kind of understand why, Scott, because it's so easy, and because if you can't trust Google, who can you trust? And people don't realize that Google isn't really Google. It's just a throughput for clicks. And I'll tell you what I don't understand. I do understand why people sit down at their screen to try to figure out the world. I don't understand the evil that drives some people to put life-threatening information on the internet that will be picked up, trusted, and actually acted upon by poorly informed people. I understand why people turn to their computer for information. I turn 10 times a day for the answers to questions. I don't understand the evil behind the conspiracy theorists.
Well, Dr. Uhlein, I guess in a bigger question here, if I'm in a room and I get diagnosed with diabetes, and there's somebody in the room who's trying to tell me how to handle my diabetes, and they are not a doctor, all they've done is Google diabetes and done some informed research, I might not follow their research, I might go see a doctor.
Or you might not.
Or I might not. But with COVID, we are willing to listen to anybody who affirms a belief that we all might already have.
Yeah. Well, the fundamental problem here, Scott, is that we are human. And nothing you or I say is going to change that. So we fall prey quite easily to things we want to believe, even whether they're true or not. And the better they're expressed, whether false or not, the more likely we are to fall prey to this misinformation.
And all that being said, schools are in, businesses are open, mask mandates have pretty well went by the wayside for the most part in most places. What's the end game here? Is this just here to stay forever now, and we'll see what happens with variants and vaccinations?
Well said. Yes. This is probably here forever, and we'll see what happens with variants and vaccinations. And I believe there is a possibility that Darwin's law of natural selection may come into play here. If we see a particularly contagious and particularly virulent new variant, it's going to kill off an awful lot of those people who are not immunized. And I think the rest will come to their senses and scramble quickly for anything that can keep them alive.
If you are vaccinated, if you are boosted, is it okay to walk around without a mask in a grocery store?
I wouldn't do it. It's not okay in my state. Although I have two states. We have a home in Utah as well, and I just came back last week from skiing up there, and you got to stop a few times along the way. It's a long drive, 600 miles, and when you go in for gas and then you go into the gas station, into the stores, they all have stores along the way. I was about the only person in Nevada and Utah wearing a mask in the store. Now, that's just dumb. Why would you not protect yourself against the possibility that some guy with an infection was spreading the disease in there? Why would you not do that?
Dr. Euline, well, this is the question. Because masks have become a figure, in a way, of this COVID-19. People will tell you that masks don't help at all. From a doctor, once and for all, and I'm sure we've done this before, but it bears repeating, why does wearing a mask help?
Well, wearing a mask helps because it provides a physical block between the viral particles that someone can shed upon you and your respiratory tract, here, the nose, and mouth, lungs. It's a very simple thing, and of course, the effectiveness of the mask depends on the filtration capacity of the material you use for the mask, which is why I wear these gosh-awful, ugly, real respirators, big white masks that I clamp tightly around my head, and I'm no longer satisfied with just a simple cloth mask, which I wore at the beginning. Now, why did I wear it at the beginning? It was the best we had, and it was the best we knew. But as research comes out every day, we learn more. And what we have learned is that those people who wear masks in high exposure situations, indoors, in crowds of people, are less likely to become infected than those who don't. We are learning, by the way, that those who have had three shots, some people call it two and a booster, I think the basic immunization program should be three shots, the fourth shot being the booster, and particularly in Israel now, where they're giving large numbers of people four shots, we are learning that having the fourth shot, the third and the fourth shot, actually does decrease your risk of becoming infected, certainly with the Delta form of the virus, and to some degree, even with the Omicron. So people say it doesn't keep you from getting infected. Actually, that's not true. It's not 100%, but it has kept many people from getting the infection.
Does that also cover immunocompromised people, which has been a big question among senior citizens and some young people?
Well, this whole thing really boils down to two issues. Number one, how strong is your immune system? You know, can it mount up a defense if you're exposed to just a few viral particles? And it does appear that your risk of infection is related to the so-called viral load. How much are you exposed? If you got someone who's really infected coughing right in your face, that's quite different from someone who has a mild infection and is walking by you in the street, and the strength of your immune system. We know that the immune system typically declines in functional ability with age, which is why older people at the beginning were dying at such alarming rates. So the immune system is stronger typically in younger people, but that is not an absolute hard and fast rule. And we do know that your ability, the ability of any immune system to withstand an infection, to be exposed to the virus and overcome it, beat it down, conquer it, is somewhat dependent on the viral load. So if you get just a few little viruses, almost all of us can mount an immune defense that will stop it. And if someone who is really sick and just pouring viruses into the air walks up and coughs in your face, you got a problem, immunized or not.
And this will continue on, I'm sure, and if any big changes happen, we will talk with Dr. Yulin. I wanted to bring Dr. Yulin on right after the first of the year, because we did just commemorate, I think is the best way to put it, on December 23rd, President Nixon's War on Cancer, the 50th anniversary of it. And Dr. Yulin has been in the medical field that entire 50 years, that entire span. That being said, where are we with cancer in general, and what has this 50-year period brought us? Certainly hasn't eradicated it as Nixon had hoped.
Well, it has brought us a fantastic amount of information and knowledge about the disease, about its natural course, about the various ways, new ways, in which we can attack the disease. It has brought us a much, much stronger infrastructure for dealing with cancer, and perhaps most importantly, for diagnosing cancer early in its most curable stage. And it has brought us literally some startling cures, some, because not all cancers are the same. So we have some spectacular cures. Leukemia was one time an absolutely 100% fatal disease. If you got leukemia, if your child got leukemia, it was all over. It was just a matter of time. And now we're seeing phenomenal cure rates for many of the cancers. We've learned how to treat cancer in a more limited fashion. When I was starting out, if a woman had breast cancer, no matter what the degree, she was likely to get a radical mastectomy, a massive operation that removed lymph nodes, was deforming. We've now learned how to treat breast cancer, how to individualize the cases and treat breast cancer and many other cancers with much more limited approaches. There's still so much more to learn. We have learned the important contribution of lifestyle to the origins of cancer. What we have not learned, and the medical profession, by the way, has done a phenomenal job, a terrific job of applying the scientific knowledge to medical practice, which has resulted in dramatically improved cure rates. Cure, yes, we can actually use the word cure. And to certainly improved therapies for most forms of cancer. What we have not learned as a population or as individuals is to apply the scientific knowledge in our own lives in a preventive manner. So we've still got millions of people smoking. We've still got 220 million people who are overweight. We have people who are not exercising. Man, I can go on and on with the various lifestyle factors that we know will reduce your risk of cancer and which so many people are still ignoring. We haven't learned how to convince people they should get immunizations, and we have not learned how to convince our entire population to adopt preventive strategies for cancer, for heart disease, for so many other issues. We're trying.
You know, Dr. Yulin, it's very interesting that you would bring up leukemia, which is a blood cancer, because during the holiday season, we had an author on who had written a book about a school in this area that was built over an old army depot, and there had been several cases of leukemia that had come out of that school. Now, a blood cancer versus a, let's say, pancreatic cancer or breast cancer, why are those different? Because as you say, now with blood cancers, survival times are longer, there is a chance for cure. When in, as in pancreatic cancer and things of that nature, it's still much more difficult.
Well, this is the wondrous part of life. There are some explanations. The most simple, by the way, the most simple being that the blood forming tissues. We call it the hemopoietic system, the tissues that create blood cells, are extremely sensitive to certain chemicals, and therefore it is possible to eliminate the cancer cells, reestablish a good, healthy blood-forming system, and start again. Whereas the pancreas is composed of solid tissue buried deep within the abdomen. Cancers of the pancreas tend to be what we call fairly silent, meaning that they can grow to destructive levels before they cause any symptoms. So we diagnose them so late. Very hard to treat once they have achieved the late stage. The surgery is extremely difficult because of the anatomy where the pancreas is located. Adequate radiation is almost impossible because the intestines cannot tolerate the amount of radiation it would take to totally wipe out the cancer. So, I don't want to get too technical about this, but it gets back to that that wondrous fact that everything's so different from everything else. Everybody is so different from everybody else. And it is just the nature of these two cancers. I can come up with a great example. I've had several skin cancers removed. And boy, you can spot those early. You can cut them out simply. The dermatologist takes my hand, and you walk away cured. It's cancer, but don't put it in the same league as pancreatic cancer or a blood cancer, because they're just not in the same ballpark.
You know, Dr. Euleen, one of the things that worries people, and I think we go back to the internet on this, you get something, you get any kind of disease, and cancer being one of those, you Google it. And cancer is one of those illnesses that a lot of times will give you timetables. Doctors will give you timetables. The internet will give you timetables. Television will give you timetables. But yet, if you are diagnosed diabetic or you have open heart surgery, nobody talks in terms of timetables or the destruction that, say, an insulin-dependent diabetic can have. Risk for stroke and heart attack go up, narrowing of the arteries, your eyesight, amputation, so on and so forth. Why is cancer treated that way, but things like diabetes and heart disease, congestive heart failure long-term, are not?
Wow, that's a great question. I haven't thought about it a lot. In part, number one, it's because people like numbers. People want definite answers. So doctors want to try to give something definite. And the second thing is that some disorders lend themselves particularly well to numbers. So, for example, it's easy to say, if 1,000 people get cancer of the pancreas, how many people will be alive in 10 years? And I can now give you the 10-year survival rate for pancreatic cancer. It's very low. I'm I'm not sure exactly what the number is, but for purposes of illustrating what I'm talking about, let me make up a number. 20%. So you look the patient in the eye, and the patient says, oh, my God, I have pancreatic cancer. I hear it's a fatal illness. No. 20% of people who have pancreatic cancer are alive 10 years later. Oh, really? Well, I want to be one of those people. Here's what that 20% figure hides. It hides the fact that there's no such thing as being 20% alive. You are either alive or you are dead. You can't be 20% alive. Well, there are some people walking around 20% alive, but that's up in their head. But so these figures are useful in a very, very general way, and they have absolutely no application in an individual case.
Dr. Yulin, I think this leads to our next question. In the last 15 years, because particularly of immunotherapy and some things they're doing with stem cells, and even a chemotherapy pill, which I didn't even realize existed until about 6 months ago, that's how undereducated I've been about this, have the last 15 years been the most productive in cancer research, and we are not seeing the results of those tests, runs, because it takes quite a while to see the results of those?
Yeah, here's the trap we get into. The last 15 years have been fantastically productive. I mean, we've seen some really exciting breakthroughs. But what I need to point out is that those 15 years would not have been possible without the 15 years of research that preceded them. We build our knowledge one step at a time. So without the foundation of knowledge that was gained 30 years ago and 40 years ago, we would not have seen the progress that we noted 20 years ago and 15 years ago, and the exciting therapies that we are seeing today would not be possible. I think the same thing can be said of COVID. Here, this virus, never seen before. Well, that's not true. The family of viruses has been seen before. Coronavirus causes colds. This virus explodes upon the earth and kills millions of people. And in 2 short years, we now have some effective therapies. It started early enough. We now have immunizations that are keeping people from dying or going into the hospital. I mean, that's fantastic in 2 short years. But let's not delude ourselves. These 2 short, wonderfully effective years were built on 20 years of previous research. And it is why we in this country must never let our guard down and must never stop funding the kind of research that will produce even more dramatic results for our children and our grandchildren.
And I think that leads to the question, is that if you are diagnosed with something, some form of cancer, which is many people, I think 1 in 3 is the number now, will be diagnosed in their lifetime. When you look at the information, this is an ever-changing thing. Numbers, we like numbers, but they are ever-changing at this point. Is that not the case?
Well, they are ever-changing, and they apply to large groups of people. So if you're trying to figure out something for yourself, the 30% number doesn't mean anything. 60% doesn't mean anything. It's only useful when you're asking about 1,000 people. And at an individual level, you could be at the very top of that pile, completely successful, or at the very bottom. And what you need to do is to learn what increases your odds of being at the top. That's why I got immunized. I asked myself, hey, what gives me the best chance of survival? I want to be alive. I got immunized because the data are very clear on that one. And the same kind of approach can be applied to most serious illnesses.
Speaking about the survival, and this kind of runs parallel with the pandemic as well, when the vaccinations were first given out, a lot of people heard about how sick people got that first weekend or for a week, and that panicked them away from getting the vaccination. And for years now, cancer has been thought to be treated with chemotherapy and or radiation. And the picture that people have in their mind is IVs, nausea, horrible fatigue, can't do anything while this is going on. Is that changing?
Yes, it is, because more and more therapies are being developed that have fewer side effects, immunotherapy, for example, compared to chemotherapy. The picture is vastly improved because we are diagnosing cancer so much earlier. But I need to take you back to your original comment about people who avoided immunizations because they heard that immunizations made people feel awful. And I was actually kind of disappointed in my first immunization because I didn't feel awful. And to me, that meant my immune system was not reacting enough to the first shot. And after I got my second shot, I really was feeling tired for 24 hours. I took to bed and I celebrated because that was a sign that my immune system was working. The symptoms were not from the vaccine. The symptoms are due to your immune system building up immunity in response to the vaccine. I wish more people understood this process. And when I got my third shot, I pre-programmed my schedule. So I left 2 days afterward that I could spend in bed. I only needed one, but I was grateful that I did not feel well after the immunization.
You know, Dr. Yulian, when we look at the picture here, 50 years since Nixon tried to lay out the gauntlet to eradicate cancer, and I think in his mind, if you listen to that speech, he thought it was going to be done rather quickly, like other illnesses.
Right.
But here we are 50 years later. The treatments are better. Is there ever going to be a day where cancer is a manageable disease and not a fatal disease, even pancreatic?
Well, I'm an eternal optimist, so I do believe that that day will come, not in my lifetime, maybe not in my children's lifetime. My kids are in their 50s. But I do believe the day will come, but it will come only if we are prepared to commit vast sums of money and energy without an immediate payoff. And I was not ever a fan of Richard Nixon, but I worship the man for having the foresight to start the war against cancer, to invest so heavily in something that would produce no immediate benefit but has had staggeringly positive benefit over the decades. God bless Richard Nixon for doing that.
You know, Dr. Yulian, maybe in summing up here about the 50 years of the war on cancer, it's an interesting thing because we talk about those numbers a lot, and when you Google, that's one of the first things you see. If you Google any type of cancer, you see the 5, the 10, the 20-year survival rate. If you're a doctor and you are dealing with this, is it better sometime to walk up to the person and instead of saying, you know, there's a 20% survival rate in 5 years with this, or say, you know, I've had people who had the same thing 15 years and they're alive today? Because with all the depression and anxiety we have in this country right now, which is leading to skyrocketing suicide rates, Is should the phrasing on this be better?
Yes, it should. I think what I always took pains to explain to my patients that while those numbers apply to very large groups of people, they are meaningless when referring to one individual. And I would tell them, I'm prepared to make a commitment to do anything I can possibly do to help you beat this cancer. Are you ready? And if so, let's not talk about the others. Let's just get on with the work.
And just to double back on the pandemic, where do you think we're headed as we head into warmer weather in the Midwest? Do you think that's just going to help? And is the fact that more people have been infected now going to help numbers stay lower than they were this past holiday season?
The answer is yes and yes. But we still don't know if another variant will come along that is able to overcome the immunity that has been acquired by people through natural infection and immunization. We do know that the current that infection with one variant, already we're seeing a difference between Delta and Omicron in terms of reinfection rates. So I just need to point out, yes, all of these things are good, but this is not a time to lower your guard. This is not a time for cavalier, irresponsible behavior. If anything, it's a time to capitalize on the advantages of warm weather and outdoors and redouble our efforts to stop the spread.
Dr. Art Uhlein, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for getting up extra early for us. And if anything arises, I'm sure we will talk again soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Fun to be with you.
The legendary Dr. Art Uhlein. Don't forget, Adam coming up next, 10 a.m. till 11 a.m. and Voice of a People with Linda Sims today, 4:10 until 5 p.m. So stick with your radios. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
And have some questions for us on the radio. And invite you to do that all the time at 740-383-9944.
The Marion Towers Apartments are a supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Address 400 Delaware Avenue, phone number